Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. So, I think I will explain how the Earth got into the making robots business. And I guess I'll point out why it'd be a good cause. It'd be something good for human beings to do to get it out of that business, because it's making, you know, a lot of torture that's just a waste. And smart things should say torture is bad and figure out a way to stop torture from happening, blah, 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 blah. But we can only do it robotically. We can't do it as anything other than just being obedient to some sort of logic, you know, some sort of reasoning that can take place in a brain where it puts A together with B and comes up with C, kind of a thing. Does really simple kind of math. You know, adds up a 6 and then a minus 4 billion and figures out, hey, that's a deficit, a very big deficit. And you got to stop deficits. Deficits are bad. Okay? So that'll basically be the video. So I'll actually do something different than usual. I'll show a drawing. Yeah, go through it and explain. So anyway, on to that. Alright, I'm back. Alright, so we're starting here in the middle. So this is where it sort of starts, with this idea of a Goldilocks zone. So the Earth is in some sort of place in space where, you know, there's a lot of circumstances because of the way the atmosphere got configured and different other little things, that it's quiet here. Okay, all the evil radiation can't get in, you know, cosmic rays and all that kind of stuff break down before they get to the surface. Blah, 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 blah. So it's a nice environment for chemistry to take place. And in all the other environments, it's either too hot or too cold. So they call it Goldilocks. And they could call it Goldilocks because, yes, the Earth eventually makes robots that make up fables and live by them. Happily ever after. Silver lining. you know, just bullshit. Alright, so anyway, so that's where the Earth is, and that's why this, all this stuff is able to happen. So this stuff happens all over the place in the universe. The idea is it starts with electrons and protons, and there's a bunch of this little force stuff that's, you know, always banging into them, moving them around. And because of their configuration, they reflect this stuff in a certain way, and they end up being opposed to each other. That is, the electrons can't deal with other electrons and the protons can't deal with other protons because they radiate a force that affects them. So this has a virus that kills other protons, you could argue, and the electrons, you know, push away other electrons, but they like each other, so they're very compatible as opposites. So, you know, you could make some sort of sexual thing and say, you know, men and women, and you know, frankly, it doesn't work as well the opposite way. Blah, blah, blah. No commentary intended. Just mean there's not the appropriate, you know, stick and hold. Anyway, so that's where it starts, is with the action of these little charged bits. And then you create something called a hydrogen atom, because, yes, the electrons are like the protons, so they get together. And when they really, really, you know, when they get married, then they're called a neutron. But it's all the same thing. Hydrogen atom, neutron, same difference. It's just that one of them's married, one of them has a little ring on their finger, and the other one doesn't. So hydrogen does make all the other atoms, because the neutrons essentially make all the other atoms. So hydrogen, it's just hydrogen, just more of it, you could argue. So anyway, inside the sun, in this pressurized environment, there's no strong force. There's just this fact that electrons and protons cancel each other's hatred. So if you're married, your electron can't see the suitors coming in the back door, so to speak. Can't see the other electrons and doesn't worry about them, as long as they're over on this side. If they're on this side, yeah, I can see them, don't like them. But if they're on the other side, I mean, if they're behind your wife, you don't see them. You can't, hey, no harm, no foul, I don't care. I'm not going to get upset. So they're pretty dumb. But anyway, so you create this configuration inside this thing called a compression, a nucleus, where you have more, twice as many protons as you have electrons. And so it's a net positive. But they all kind of are arranged so they stick together. So they're all kind of in an orgy thingy. All right. And then the rest of the atoms are just the idea that you put a bunch of electrons in a geometric position, you know, and there's 100 geometric positions that can survive when you pull them out of the pressure. So there's a whole bunch of critters that live really deep in the ocean. And some of them, you know, went to the deeper ocean, so you can bring them back out because they have mechanisms to equalize the pressure and they just don't blow up. But a lot of them that have always been there, never evolved out, never went back, that kind of thing, they'll just blow up. They can't deal with the pressure change. So the suns probably create lots of different configurations of atoms, lots of different chemistry, but it's chemistry that can't survive outside of the high pressure of the sun. So there's only 100 of these arrangements, you know, where you put these little things in different arrangements and the geometry works. It's very solid. It's very hard to break, okay, because the attractions and the repulsions are just right. So it's more Goldilocks stuff. So there's only 100 Goldilocks atoms. And then the atoms themselves connect to each other, okay, and create compounds, what are called compounds. So this will be, you know, some hydrogen here, and there'll be some oxygen here, and some other kind of lithium over here, and a carbon over here, and they'll all combine and make another kind of structure. And it's just a blob of crap, really. You know, most of the time, the combinations just make crap. But sometimes it makes something pointed, you know, or something more indestructible, like, you know, the water molecules will actually get into a circle. So you get shapes, you get different things out of it, and one of the things you end up with is DNA. Okay, you probably end up with RNA first, but who cares? It's basically just a structure where you have this sequence of atoms, okay, connected to each other, and it's a really pure relationship. All the same stuff connected. And what it does is basically stuff hits it, sticks to it, and now it can do interactions that can't take place without it. So without the DNA molecule, certain compounds can't be made. But because the DNA sticks an oxygen here, and then right next to it, a carbon can come in and stick, and now these two can get combined where they couldn't combine on their own because they would bounce off of each other, the pressure wouldn't be right. They couldn't arrange all the Sallys and the Georges and the Bills and the, you know, Bobbies in the right order. And so they can't combine, but they can if they hit a DNA molecule. So that's really its features, that it makes chemistry. Little pieces go in and different pieces come out, different blobs or clumps. And so DNA molecules essentially can make other compounds specific to them. And one of the compounds they actually probably make is this little critter that cuts the molecule in half. You know, it actually saws through all the little teeth and basically breaks the two pieces of the molecule in half. And then the pieces by themselves, they don't need any help. You know, they have like half a stick here and they'll just recreate, okay, the thing that's missing, the piece that's got broken off. So that's how reproduction happens. So that's the reproductive part. It's broken and the two pieces, instead of trying to recombine, the two pieces just remake what was broken off. And so that's what starts evolution, in the sense that with that process of this molecule controlling a bunch of chemistry in its environment, and then it breaks in half, and it reforms itself and makes a copy of itself to go off and do the same thing somewhere else. And so now it spreads out into the world because it's making more of itself. All right, and that ends up with an organism that's, you know, eventually created by some kind of thing. A membrane has to be created, and it creates a very closed environment for all this process to happen, but frankly in a noisy environment it's harder to happen. So it happens if you can isolate what kind of chemistry can get in, what kind of molecules, so you don't let any big shit in, any stuff that's going to make a mess. And so then this process of this DNA molecule doing this stuff of dividing happens much more rapidly. So it ends up, as long as the DNA molecule created this membrane, it can share it. And so then it ends up doing cell division, you know, where the two cells split and they share the chromosomes, and you end up with asexual reproduction. And then eventually you get the sex over here somewhere, but who cares? It's such a distraction. I mean, the amount of time spent, you know, contemplating trivial entrances and exits, whatever, humping, it makes us, you know, it's embarrassing, you know, how much time, how much of your life you've wasted worrying about your romantic future. Anyway, so you have this cell. Then at one time in the history of this evolution, this process in the billion years, so again, this is like a billion years. So it's a grain of sand on a beach, you know, the little tiny part we are, a little grain of sand on a beach. The real process is this billion years of crap happening. And so somewhere in that event, one of these things, you know, that has a mouth at one end, an opening, and a little anus at the other end to shoot the shit out. So, you know, it's processing, you know, it's taking stuff from the environment to help make its DNA molecules, and it's getting rid of the shit, you know, the waste products. So, you know, it takes in the old days, it would be ammonia or some other kind of bullshit, poops out oxygen. It probably was the other way around originally, so the new life forms are probably exist merely because they were poo eaters. They could eat the poo of the original living things, and because they could eat the poo, that was a huge advantage. So it was lots of poo around. Alright, so anyway. So yeah, it's really, you know, it's really awkward. Oh, well, what's your, you know, greatest granddaddy? Oh, he's a poo eater. Anyway, then eventually this thing happened one time where one of these things ate one of its friends or associates, and frankly it survived inside of it, and so this became the possessing, it ate it, and the thing it ate became the owner of the whole system. So it ate it like an aliens or something, a little alien was in there, and instead of popping out, it decided, fuck this, I'm going to stay in here and just control this thing. So it took possession of this, and now became, it has the advantage now of having two membranes. You know, now it's got the outside one and the inside one. So huge advantage for a lot of reasons. So anyway, so this thing then eventually became this spongy thing, you know, where a bunch of these things get together. So although we call this life, you know, these cell things, these single cells with little, you know, doing little bullshit, you know, we're a whole different form because we're made out of life. We're made out of living things. Each one of our little cells is one of these living things, and we're basically enslaving it, okay? Now, it doesn't matter because it doesn't have a brain. Its feelings can't be hurt, and it can't work too hard. It can't do any of that stuff, so it's no, you know, it's not a great tragedy. But it is the truth. All right. It is the truth that all these things, once they were created, they were a mouth and an anus. I mean, they didn't go out and earn a living. They went out and killed other shit and sucked its guts out. So anyway, one of the first gut suckers. So the sponge is like an example of just this collection. But eventually the collection could make a tail, and then the collection could make an antenna, and then the collection could make an eyeball or a gill or some other kind of organ. So these are the organisms, okay? So you've got these little animals made out of these clumps of cells, 400 or 500 of them, and it creates a little organism. And then eventually you get to this fishy thing, okay? So, you know, I'm leaving a lot of steps out, but, you know, come on, it's not that complicated. So this makes specific things. So an eyeball is a specific thing. Your liver is a specific thing. Your lungs are a specific thing. All the little parts are specific things. Not very, you know, where the cells are just a little bit different. You know, some are spiky, some are this, some are that. And they can do a different thing, and they produce different chemistry because of how the DNA has possessed them. And, you know, that's really all there is. They're just different little systems built inside of your body that produce different chemicals, and you just inject them into the bloodstream, and you have a certain balance, and that's how the system all ties together, and you end up with a fish. And then you could go from fish to man, which isn't hard to see, okay? I mean, eyeballs, lungs, little army finny things, five fingers, just like, five fingers on a fish's fin, kind of a giveaway, tail, side fins. It's all, the parts are still there, the spine, all the basic parts are all there. So we're just really fish, so it's, it's another, not, it doesn't stand out and say, wow, that's so cool, we're fish. No, it's kind of like a disappointment that really we are just doing the same thing, and most of the mammals on Earth are just doing what fish do. They just graze, right? And then you have sharks and you have other animals that just eat the other stuff that's grazing. So it's the same damn thing going on. And unfortunately, they're all not very smart, so they don't know they're being born to die. And it's all to just the DNA molecule changes. So the molecule makes changes. And the little changes that happen to the molecule, gets hit with a piece of radiation, breaks off this little piece, and now it makes a different chemical. And that's where all this comes from. So it's just the molecule changes, then the shape of the thing changes. And, it's not any more complicated than that. All right, so that's enough of that. And so I guess I'll just talk about robots and fish. I mean, that's sort of the important part, right? I mean, if you were to say, what's the most important part to us? Well, understanding the difference between being a retarded robot and being this robot that can think it's thinking, okay? We can think we're thinking, and we're doing something different, and really you're just adding numbers. Now, fish just adds 2 plus 2. We, can do the more complicated thing. We can add 2 plus 2, and then we could divide by 7, and then we could multiply by 16, so we can do more complicated math. And by math, I just mean logic. We can understand a little bit more. We can see a tree and we don't see some flat thing that's in our way. We can understand it's round. We can understand it has bark. We can understand we might be able to climb it. Fish can't do any of that. It just sees a tree. All right. So, enough of the drawing, I suppose. And I'd be back to say some more crap about what this process has done and what we should do about it. All right, so the argument is a simple one, that the Earth is just trapped in this Goldilocks zone. It makes a bunch of compounds. The compounds can get quite complex because there isn't enough radiation to destroy them because of the circumstance of its magnetic field and the atmosphere make for a combination that prevents all this radiation that would break all the fancy chemistry into little pieces. So something can happen that can't happen in other places. The fact that it can happen in the first place, again, I could argue, is so many. It's like winning the lottery 7 times in a row or something. It's the odds against it are probably insanely high. Lots of one-time events in billions of years. So, things that are just so unusual. 7 lightning strikes in the same location. Some kind of crazy crap had to happen in terms of unlikelihoods. Yahtzee dice landing on top of each other. Lots of ways to analogize it. But a bunch of very improbable events had to take place for us to eventually get here. So it's some sort of very rare chemistry. Even if you could create another Goldilocks planet, the odds of it ever getting through this process are thin. Just realize that in the billion years, this stuff has been cooking inside of the Earth, under the water. The best it produced was an octopus or, a shark. There's nothing smarter that, happened in the water. The smart things in the ocean went from land into the ocean. And frankly, they're not all that smart, right? So, sorry, don't want to be offending the dolphins, but frankly, they're still pretty stupid. It's just the vocabulary thing, really. They have everything except language. Without language, you can't do crap. And it's the whole idea that you have to basically acquire language before you can do anything with it, right? So that's the catch-22 that we also jumped over. Somehow we banged into a hurdle. I'm going to give you the capacity to go to high school, okay, and learn, but I'm going to give it to you before there's a high school to go to. So you can't go to high school and learn. And that's what evolution did. It gave us a capacity to do stuff that we couldn't use. So it's an unusual event that something that was useless got preserved long enough for us to actually build the high school and then use the thing that we, you know, got the attribute for. So that's sort of what our, that's sort of part of the evolution. It's really not the size of our brain. It's so spectacular. It's the fact that we have taken its function and devoted it to one purpose. So some of the senses that the other animals have, we don't have. We're not too good at all that stuff they can do. Cats can see and hear better. And all, you know, you can go through all the animals and say, gee, they're so much superior to us in those areas. Well, it's because we sacrifice those functions to devote them to this language thing. And that's really the key to the whole thing. So you could argue that even primates are probably sensually experiencing the world richer than we are, because they don't have language and their brain hasn't been devoted to this abstraction of doing 1 plus 1s, 2 plus 2, 4, 4 plus 4 kind of crap. And that's essentially what language is also. It's a construct that you have to put in order, so you need sufficient memory to create the language. I guess that's a good way to analogize it. In a sense, a computer has to vote a certain amount of percentage of its resources to merely understanding language. You know, merely understanding what a 1, 2, 3, 4, all that stuff is before it can, it has to define stuff before it can assign stuff a definition. So it has to create the words that make up definitions. And so it has to use a lot of resources just to create the language, the translation, the Rosetta Stone, whatever you want to call it, of going from a concept, just a tree, a thing in the way, to a more elaborate definition of the thing in the way. All right, so that's a little bit unnecessarily complicated, I suppose. So it's just about, we're just programmed machines. And again, we can look at all the other machines and you can see how they're programmed. Cats are cats, skunks are skunks, pigs are pigs. All the animals are so much alike, right? They just kind of pop out and they're all kind of doing the same thing. Now we can see that in these higher forms, dogs and cats, for example, that they do end up with personalities like we have. But they have an underlying instincts that are all the same, right? All the cats, you can trick them with a piece of string, right? You can get them all to react to the piece of string. So they obviously have instincts that, you know, that are still, they still have programs that are DNA controlled, you know, that are part of their structure and at birth, and they identify them essentially as a cat. They have cat brain features, where humans really don't. There's not too much that's regular. I mean, I suppose every baby has some fear of falling, you know, some don't step where there's no surface. So we have a few tiny instincts, but they're really tiny, very few. And everything else is just really learn as you go. Reward and punishment, success and failure, and you just figure out how to walk. You have to figure that out. You have to figure out all this stuff, right? A gazelle is born and it already has the program for how to use its arms and legs. Now, it's a little wobbly for the first 15 minutes, but it only takes 15 minutes, right? It's not a long time before it's up and running. And the only way it could do that is it has to already have the running program already written in its brain. So it doesn't have this resource. That whole hunk of the brain has to be already used. It can't learn. It can't do anything with that part of the brain because it's using it to already know how to run. So obviously when humans are born, they don't know how to do anything. Okay, it's almost nothing. They almost choke on their own saliva. They're so broken. So they're really disabled. And it takes years, okay, to get them working right. That's because the space is left empty to do all of this language, talking, communicating thing. It's an open field. All right, so what do most people learn? They learn how to scheme. They learn all these bad lessons from all the bad examples of all the other jerky, stupid humans. The humans teach them a bunch of fables or a bunch of nonsense and devote them to silly processes. The humans don't explain that, you know, look, you're gonna, if you want to succeed in the world, you got to start right from the very beginning, because you're filling your brain full of crap. And if you fill it full of playing games and, you know, how to scheme your way into the affections of some woman or do this or do that, well, you're just wasting the resource. All right. And you only have so much of it. So people end up, you can see it. I mean, it's the strategies are, I'm just pointing out that if you want to be equipped to do thinking, okay, that you can't be obsessed with playing the violin or doing this or doing that, doing something else, because guess what? That'll use up all of your brain and you won't have any left to do this thinking thing. Thinking of other stuff. All you'll have is that program running. So you can see that in a lot of people. They're completely devoted to one thing and they can't do anything else, pretty much. You could point to Idiot Savant, but it's really not that bad. But obsessions are not good, generally speaking, for general function. And then you have to leave the resources available if your brain is going to use them. So it's sort of arguing that your space, the space in which you can throw concepts and do abstract thinking, imagination, for example, is narrowed by how much you have used playing golf or studying baseball or telling jokes or, whatever the other thing is. It's competing with the space you're left available for abstract imagining, banging things into each other, banging ideas into each other, doing all of that conceptual stuff. So, it's a hard balance whether you should try to be proficient at one thing or be functional, be a multi-tool or a very specific tool. Okay, I guess it would be a good way to put it. A Swiss Army knife that can do lots of different things, but none of them perfectly, or, some tool designed exactly for the purpose. Anyway, so I don't know how important that is. Just saying, none of it comes from the DNA molecule. So humans are separate in that sense that they are unprogrammed, essentially, and because the environment is the place it has to get the language from. It has to get, it has to be able to adapt, and that's how it's made, is to adapt to the fact that it might be born on a mountain or it might be born in a valley, and it's going to have to learn different skills depending on where it's born. So it has that adaptability. And I guess that's a key factor in how animals change, is ones that need to adapt because they're going to conquer the world, and ones that don't need to adapt because they're just going to eat grass and go north to south, back and forth all day, eating grass. So some organisms need to adapt because they're taking over the world. Others just take over where they are, one area, okay? I mean, water buffaloes don't climb trees. They're not going to live in a rainforest. Well, they might live in a puddle in the rainforest, but they're not going to do much rainforesting. So I'll pause and try to direct this more directly. It's about being a robot. I mean, that is the point, that the Earth is just making robots, and we just happen to be the fanciest version of the robot. We're not the fanciest. We just happen to have that skill set that allows us to adapt, and we have the faculty of being environmentally controlled rather than genetically controlled. All right, so the tricky subject of memory and reward and punishment, and the two are sort of connected. So obviously you can have a machine that just has programs and it just reacts. So you hit it with blue, it says red, it produces red. It does some simple thing. Round thing comes in, it makes square thing go out. Some sort of simple response, and that's where everything was trapped at one point. The machines just did that. And there's some point where the machine has this organ called the brain, okay, this organization, this central processing unit where all the sense data comes in so it can measure two things against each other. I'm high, you know, the organism needs nutrient, but it smells Tyrannosaurus. And it says, well, I can't get nutrient while Tyrannosaurus smell is in the air. So I have to wait till the Tyrannosaurus smell goes away. So there's these programs. And the key became, well, you know, instead of having them built in, why don't you learn from the environment? Because the environment might not have Tyrannosaurus in it. You might be living on a mountain and the Tyrannosaurus can't climb the mountain, so you don't got to worry about Tyrannosaurus. So it'd be stupid for you to have, I smell a Tyrannosaurus when there's no Tyrannosaurus to smell. That kind of thing. And so the adaptation of the molecule, okay, is to let it learn. And so it has to do that in some way. So part of the way that became advantageous was to record what you've done previously. So the brain had to have some capacity to store what it just did, okay, and say, this is now a memory. All right, now you're going to compare a future circumstance to the memory, and the memory will tell you what works or didn't work. Now, the success is based on the fact that you survived. So the initial test was just, did you survive or did you not survive? If you survived, we'll assume what you did the previous time worked. So we'll just have you do it again. Do what you did previously. But eventually, the idea was, yes, let's have some adaptation. Let's have some refinement so you can perfect the strategy of how to climb a tree, because you can learn incrementally what works even better. Okay, yeah, it's one thing to use your arms and just use your arms, but then you can figure out, well, maybe if I use my, you know, use my arms just to hold on, then I use my feet to push up, it works much better, this kind of thing. And the only way we can learn that is through some other process where you're comparing different events. And the only way to compare them is to store some kind of idea of how it went. So you need some sort of positive and negative statement made about the different memories. So memories basically became, how do I make it a positive memory, like this worked, and how do I have an example, another memory, of how it doesn't work? Don't do this, do this. So there's two different things the brain needs to say. Do this, and need to say, really don't do this, because this one doesn't work. Okay, so that was really, I mean, it's almost as vital to know what won't work as it is vital to know what will work. So in any strategy, you know, these two things, what, you know, what gives you an advantage and what gives you a disadvantage, they're equally important. Well, something like that. Who cares? 60-40, 40-60. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying this is, if you're going to have knowledge of what won't work is often just as valuable as knowledge of what will work. Just as knowledge of catastrophic capacity, like your lithium battery can blow up or catch fire and burn your house down, having knowledge of that is just as valuable as having knowledge of how much good it can do. You have to balance the danger versus the acquisition of function. That's where I'm going to argue that feelings comes into this. Because the only way the brain could make the assignment is it had to attach something to it, a statement that said, do this and don't do this. And it had to be a statement you pay attention to. It couldn't just be the idea of do this. It had to be something really persuasive. And so that's where ouch comes in. Probably the first thing felt was ouch. Was just obnoxious sensation. Ugh. Don't do that. Run away. Get away. Move away. Do anything you have to do. This is not good. And then it turned into, well, let's give you a little bit of ouch and then we'll take it away and it'll feel really good. And so the absence of ouch became this other, the carrot. And so I'd argue that we have this perception that we're being controlled by carrots, desire, and we're being, you know, whipped, you know, by this oppressive negative force. So there's somehow a positive force, the carrot, and there's a whip. I would argue that all there is whip, and then there's no whip. So all you need is the negative. So the whole thing, the whole desire mechanism, attachment, addiction, pleasure. It's all built on first creating the anti, you know, creating the negative, and then taking the negative away. So the pleasure was an incidental consequence of creating the negative, the ouch. So ouch first, then from the ouch being taken away. And you can really see how your psychology is manipulating you that way, that your uneasiness or unsettledness is usually first, and then your everything's great feeling comes when you remove something negative, like winning the lottery creates joy because it eliminates all the things. The idea, the perception is, I'm free. I've been let out of jail. I can walk and breathe the air, you know, without the Tyrannosaurus killing me. My debts, you know, the whatever is the Tyrannosaurus. So it's liberating. And that's just about every pleasure you have is just based on liberation from your crushing, suffocating, dirty air that your life is made out of. You're breathing a bunch of dirty air, and all of a sudden you're in the clear air, and it's just so much easier to exist in the clean air than in the dirty air. Get the quicksand out of your mouth and your nose. Anyway, so that's the mechanism. So now you have this reward and punishment thing, this feeling, and that will basically allow your brain to store a whole bunch of memories, a whole bunch of stuff, and just assign a positive or a negative. And so you'll remember somebody, and you have this, ooh, they died horribly. Yeah. Something will trigger something, and there'll be a bunch of emotion that goes with it because it either was a positive experience or a negative experience. So it'll make you feel empowered, or it'll make you feel afraid or sad or some other thing, because that's what's attached to it. It's, and there's a little bit of ouch attached to it, and that's what you're going to be told by your brain. Your brain's going to tell you this is what it adds up to. These are the words, these are the memories associated with whatever the thing is you're figuring out. Fuzzy stuff. Felt. Yeah, so I can say brain, think about felt. Right? And it'll just come up with a whole bunch of things that are related to felt. And I can think of some Chinese guy cutting the little, I cut the round circle, you know, who knows. So I can have lots of thoughts about what felt is. Okay, my brain will take the word and connect it to the context of the conversation. So what I've been talking about for the last 10 minutes will probably pollute what it's going to do. If I would have said felt to my brain 10 minutes ago, it would come up with different memories, different associations, because you know, now I can feel that, oh yeah, my leg's falling asleep. Now my body is in a different condition, and my brain is doing a whole bunch of association and talking about all this stuff, and so it's going to come up with a different answer when I say felt now than it would have done 10 minutes ago. And so, yeah, so I, for some reason, thought about how felt was made. You know, that happened to be one of the things that tied, one of the things, and that led to other connections, and it's just associations. And the pathways are going to be different based on every moment of your existence. You're going to come up with a different arrangement of what was put before you and your obligation to describe it. It's like the layers of this video in a way, right? Things will come up, and I can put things on top of other things and things behind other things, and depending on when I say produce the associations, the eyeball will be in front of these images, or this thing will be behind that one, because they're going to come in a different order. The order that they come will decide whether you can, which ones you can see. So they're all layered on top of each other. So one time you're going to see this one's going to be up front, and the other time this one's going to be up front. And all of that is kind of arbitrary. I mean, it's not very blah blah blah. There's not a, you know, but obviously it all over time works, and that's why we have it. So our brain works pretty well because what it has to do is navigate a real world. It has to navigate trees and sidewalks and different things. It has to be able to not trip on the cracks, and it has to be able to not think it can work through things, and it has to pay enough attention, and it has to have little warning devices that say, oh, you're looking at your iPhone while you're walking. You might now take a look because there might be something heading right for you, idiot. So you have to pay attention now again. So it has all kinds of alarm clocks it runs. It has all kinds of triggers that say, time to think about that, time to think about that, time to think, you know, because it knows over time the brain function has learned it needs alarm clocks, it needs timed events, it needs things that trigger, because if it doesn't, the damn thing forgets, you know. It'll put the kid in the car, and it'll go to work, and it'll forget, oh, I was supposed to drop it off at the, you know, daycare center. And, you know, it'll do really stupid things if it doesn't have these alarms. All right, so I'll take a pause and see what else I can make of this. All right, back. So the brain is producing all of this stuff. And the very reason I take a pause is because it's so many layers and so much stuff that there's a point where you're lost in it. And all you start doing is reacting to what's in front of you because the brain doesn't have enough time to consider, where am I going? So pausing gives you an opportunity to pick at it a little bit, you know, trigger, push on the buttons on your phone and make some other shit happen. And so the idea is to talk about the robotness of it, okay? The fact that every memory I have about something, red or straight thing or whatever, bulbous, I can say that bulbous, I can say the word bulbous, and yeah, for some of us that becomes a dirty conversation pretty quickly, and for other people it's like, oh that just means round and fluffy, like a dandelion, something like that, right? So we have very different memories, very different word connections, and that is our personality, and we think that we made that, when no, we didn't make any of it, okay? All of that stuff is just what movies you watched, what teachers you had, what your parents were like, what town you lived in, what country you lived in, all that crap decided what you're going to be as a robot. I mean, that's your program. Every single word is just connected to a bunch of other words based on the associations that were created by what you remember. And what you remember is sometimes so, it's so interesting to, you know, to think for a bit about why some things are really good memories and they're extremely uninteresting events. So I could argue that I have a really strong memory, okay, of a day in school where they let a bunch of regular people, fathers of the other students really, talk about what they do, you know, their job or their favorite hobby. And I remember that day, you know, I remember the guy talking about fishing and this other guy, I don't remember exactly what he talked about. But I mean, I have a whole bunch of memories connected to that day. And you're just saying, it really wasn't all that spectacular. A lot of it was kind of boring and blah, 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 blah. But my brain remembers it, okay? And it strongly remembers it in the fact that I still remember it. It still pops into my head for no obvious reason often. And you're just saying, that's one of the weirdies, right? Now, there's other memories of, like, events where I was the sickest I ever was. And that one keeps popping back into my brain. You know, it's a really negative thing. It doesn't, you know, doesn't instill much confidence. Really is kind of a downer, you know. And you'd almost say, gee, I'd be so much better off if my brain didn't get triggered and present me with these horror story things, right? And I've said this before. It's like there's people in, you know, my life that you would wish you didn't see them, you know, the last 10 years of their life, or the last 5, or the last 2. Because it's essentially completely clouded and destroyed what would be the word association. You know, what the idea would be. The idea of that person would be an insanely positive thing. Like, you love them, and they died. So, you know, you can't do the very positive thing of having this other person love you, because the images of them dying is so much more, you know, it's on top of all of that. And you really can never again see it except through these little cracks, where you force your brain to look through the little crack and say, what was the person really like? Oh yeah, now you can remember, oh yeah, I can see them smiling and I can see them doing all this really great stuff, living a really rich and interesting life. Because now, I have to really look through this little tiny hole to see that. Because if I say their name, this is what I see. I see this dark black blob of hell. So, I mean, you could say Pompeii, right? And what do we remember of Pompeii? Well, we remember a bunch of people suffocating and being buried by ash. Okay. Everything else they did, lost, gone. It's not part of the memory. It's not part of the trigger. It's not part of the definition. And that's not by my choice. No, I don't choose to think what I think. My brain's not making choices. It's deciding. Okay, it's just that simple. It's clearly just assigning an order and a connection, and I'm stuck with it. Okay, I can't do much about it except pretend, okay, I'm going to think about it, or I'm going to look through the crack. Well, it already knows to do that, so it already... It's not something I invented as an idea. My brain already knew how to do it, and that's why it did it. So, you know, there's nothing truly original. We don't really invent anything. We don't really do anything in the sense that it's only our ideas and the connections and the memories that do it. Okay? They're building it all. And they only exist because of your unique circumstance in terms of traversing 60 years of earth dwelling, or whatever it is. So in that time, you've acquired a certain amount of this or that, you've read certain books, you've had certain connections made, and you're just regurgitating, reflecting. So when something throws something at you, you build a certain kind of box. That's what you do. You've learned how to build this kind of box. Your brain associates and makes that kind of box, and that's what it produces. So we're all stuck just being a slave to our experience. And even the idea of breaking the chains, we're a slave to that idea. It's not our idea. All right. It's just what the brain says. Well, you're futile, so you better do something to escape because you're in trouble. Just like me, I'm sitting here, you know, and it's just the fact that even though I have all of this capacity to talk about how my brain works, I don't still have much capacity to manipulate it, okay, to find tools that allow me to, you know, change what it's doing. You know, the function is, you know, it's like your heartbeat. The function is disconnected from beat slower. I mean, I can't just say that. I can't just command. So I can't make commands to my brain to don't think about that. Because as soon as I say don't think about that, I'm almost triggering another reflex in the brain, which is he's trying to hide something, so don't let him hide it. Yeah, and so I'm defeated by the other triggers that say you're not allowed to say don't think about that. Alright, so yeah, one more pause. Alright, so to sort of get to the point. So the point is overview of this whole thing. You're saying, yes, we're just robots, and what do we are? We're basically being tormented most of the time, punished. Our psychology is punishing us, the culture punishes us, everything's forcing us to, you know, walk these very difficult paths. You have to earn your existence, you have to produce something that the society values, or you starve to death, or you, you know, live in deprivated, horrible conditions, and you don't have health care, and you don't have this, and you don't have that, and you don't have anybody cares about you, and all this other crap. You get punished harshly. And then again, just the psychological burdens. I mean, very people that had everything in terms of being valuable. They were beautiful and they were charming and they were rich and they were all this stuff. And then they, you know, poured drain cleaner down their throat. Because just psychologically existing is difficult. Fighting all of these mechanisms that are pulling and tugging and twisting you to somehow make you a better machine. And, you know, you could argue it's a very imprecise science that evolution has created, this whole psychological, I'm a beta, I'm not an alpha, I have to do this, I have to win, I have to blah, 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 competitive, competitive. It's all very negative. It's all a bunch of very negative emotions that drive people to be a success or to be this or to be that. It's a bunch of angst and unsettled. Einstein was a very unsettled person. You know, he didn't live some comfortable, easy life because he was always trying to up the game and he was always trying to prove the credibility and always trying to, you know, blah, 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 fight against the againstness, the anti-ness, the, you know, all of that pressure. So it wasn't some kind of fun. And that's why he said dopey things like, I would have preferred to be a plumber. You know, it would be an easier life in some respects, but frankly, it'd be a harder life in a lot of other respects. So, you know, poo on that kind of crap. I mean, it's just sort of a, you know, our brain isn't perfect, and it does put words together and make sentences that either can or cannot make sense, that are, you know, purely good statements. I'll say Jesus Christ every now and then, or fuck God damn it, you know, not because I believe in any of that crap, just because I have language that's not as perfect as I would like it to be. Word associations and habits and impulses and reactions, all of it's a little bit too sloppy. So anyway, we're struggling, we're fighting, we're you know, eking. And that's what we do. We eke through existence. And all these other animals are just eking. They're starving. Okay, they're hungry. They have diarrhea. They, you know, it's just, you know, there's nothing really truly fun happening here. And the only fun is, yeah, now and then one of the slaves doesn't get whipped because the whip breaks. You know, and so number 43 didn't get whipped today because the whip broke. And that's, you're saying, is good enough. The day the whip broke is a good enough reason to perpetuate this silly nonsense of trying to find a game, let alone play it. There's no game to play. There's no cancer to cure. There's nothing out there in the real universe that needs us to fix it. We aren't a solution to anything. We're not an aspirin. We're not some kind of thing that's useful or good. And all we can do is clean up the mess created by our own existence, and we do that so poorly. So many horrible lives are endured, and so many people are tortured for, you know, 25 cents. 25 cents could save him from torture. Well, fuck that. You know, it's a ridiculous circumstance to exist in. And then when you look at all these poor animals that don't have our brains, so they can't analyze the maze, they can't sit there and figure out this maze and figure out that they're being tools and that they're just being whipped and that they're celebrating because every now and then the overlord decides not to whip them for a day. You know, they can't know all the stuff we can know, and we're embarrassing our intelligence by sitting there saying, let's not rescue anything, let's not save anything, let's not stop the horror. No, let's just glibly march on like Borgish little robots, okay? Let's just prove how much of a robot you are by not even having the robotic skill of adding up 2 plus minus 496,794,000 and realize you're running way too big a deficit, that your existence is way too expensive, that way too much stuff is harmed and destroyed to even provide the air that you're breathing. It's all decomposition. It's all stuff that has to die so you can do this, watch a video on YouTube. I mean, yes, this is a meritorious video to watch, I would argue. Well, this one's not even on YouTube. But anyway, you get my point. I mean, to exist in this life where these mazes are impossible to solve, they're impossibly complicated, you can't ever know what you're... should I turn right? Should I turn left? Should I say hi to that asshole? Or should I say, fuck you, asshole? What should I do? Should I play the person? Should I try to manipulate her to get her into bed? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I? All this bullshit where you don't have any hope of getting right answers most of the time. I mean, most of the decisions you make, you have no hope of knowing that was the right thing to do. Should I end this video now or talk for another 6 minutes? I don't know which one's the right thing to do. I have no way of knowing which one is the right thing to do. Nothing. There's no evidence. I can't use this stupid logic and this reasoning to in any way navigate this existence. What should I do? I find 5 little kittens on the edge of death. Should I rescue them? Well, what's going to happen? Should I save them? what's going to happen to them? Are they going to be surgically tortured? Frankly, it's torture for an animal when we do surgery because they can't say, I need more painkiller. They can't let you know they're in horrible, awful circumstances, generally speaking. And you're imposing it. And so what the hell? Can I justify that? Can I justify imposing a bunch of discomfort and horrific, potentially horrific pain and suffering on an animal to preserve an existence that doesn't have any purpose anyway? They might end up just in a shelter cage for 6 months and then, passively executed. What the fuck am I doing this for? What's the right answer? And there's no fucking way to find the right answer. The right answer is completely a mess. And the same thing is true with every interaction you have with other people in terms of trying to do them well or trying to do them harm. I mean, good intentions just pave the road to failure. That's all we have is our good intentions. And so the best we can do is try to have good intentions, try to be honorable and fair, try not to manipulate somebody, try to say to the woman you want to fuck, yeah, I want to fuck you, but I don't want to fuck you, okay? I don't want to steal from you a better destiny because I'm interfering in your existence. So I want to make sure, hey, that it's going to be good for you to continue talking to me. Because maybe it's not. And maybe we should think about it. That's the dilemma. That's a dilemma that, for me personally was a big problem. Because, I couldn't have a relationship with anybody because it was always the prospect that, hey, you're making a mistake. I'm not going anywhere. I mean, I had an anxiety disorder. I had a lot of deficits. And it was like, well, where can this go? And what's the risk we're taking? I mean, okay, yeah, we could sleep together and just be little fuck buddies. But doesn't that have the danger that somebody becomes a little bit dependent and maybe will fall in love and not be able to accept that they have to spend the rest of their life without this cherished person? Well, that's a stupid risk to take, isn't it? I mean, I have these vivid memories of, like, the perfect, Playboy Forum story that almost got written. But it didn't get written because by the time I was 17 years old, I couldn't do that. As much as I wanted to write that Forum story, okay, I knew it was... that the reality was more complicated. I knew she was going to medical school. I mean, in 6 months, she's going to fucking medical school. What the fuck? How is this going to work? I'm going to, be with this person and I'm not supposed to care, right? Yeah, it's not supposed to become important to me that we do this more than once, Or that somehow, in another case, I actually did make the mistake of saying, I'm going to write the forum page, I'm going to do the fun. And it did turn out exactly, the tragedy existed. Because all of a sudden it was over for her, but it wasn't over for me. And I spent the next 10 years being haunted, by a life I can't reconstruct. And all you people are sitting there saying there's some reason to keep doing this to people? There's a reason to keep making alcoholics and drug addicts and depressed people and suicides and this and that. There's some reason to keep doing this shit? For what? For stupid Wimbledon trophies or something? What the fuck are you justifying this with? What fucking goddamn event? What song and dance is being danced on this planet that's worth the cost, the fucking the dead bodies all over the floor. What? Anyway, that's probably a good enough place to end. And we're really close to the round number of seconds. So we'll go with that and say that's enough of a video. So anyway, my brain can't make any logic out of you optimists. I can't figure out how the fuck you contrive nonsense enough to sit there and say, yeah, Gary, I get what you're saying. I mean, my life has been a struggle too. And, you know, I have to keep fighting with my psychology. And I'm a little worried that I've done some things in my life that really did fuck other people up. And I can't fix it. You know, I can't regrow their legs. I can't redo this. I can't, you know, can't undo it. So yeah, maybe I should concede my life has been a train wreck, and maybe I should say, yeah, let's not keep wrecking trains. And my wreck was really not that bad. I mean, the train popped off the rails and it ran over a chicken. Okay, but there's lots of train wrecks where a lot more crap happens. Okay, and it's a lot worse, and there's a lot more fire and explosions and outgassing and toxic waste and all kinds of shit. So let's not pretend because your life isn't all that bad that somehow life isn't all that bad. I mean, come on, you've got to be smarter than that. All right, now it's enough. So, till the next time and such and so forth and the whatnot. This has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yes. Effelism. Life sucks-a-lism. Let it end. Graceful exit-ism. Come on. Let's just slide out of this horror. Let's save. Let's rescue the poor, tortured robots.